That was the first time of this meeting, it's lovely, and thank you for asking me to do the chair. Well, okay, my experience. I don't think I can share the 20 minutes just on set. I probably could actually. But I suspect that might be why I'm asking to do the chair. But just to give you a little bit of background, I came into OA via another fellowship. And with that fellowship, I'd had the luxury of being in rehab for 28 days. And I came out, I was told you need to get to meetings, or it was drink, or you'll drink again. And that kind of education in there and being safe set me up. And as part of that program, every week we had to go back, or we didn't have to go back, but chose to go back to what they called an aftercare group to support, like a support group. And every week we'd go back and we'd go around the room and people just say how they're doing. And I'd say, how are you doing, Sarah? And I'd go, awful, I can't stop eating. And everyone would look at me and go, oh, it's all right, you haven't had a drink. And I know where they were coming from because they weren't experienced with this this disease. But I was doing exactly the same behaviour that I'd done with bottles. All I could think about was food. I couldn't concentrate on anyone or anything. If I was talking to you, my head was thinking about what I was going to buy on the way home, how I was going to get it. My twin daughters were they were five at the time. And having had all this education during this 28-day period with meetings and everything, so the fellowship, I knew it wasn't okay to leave children on their own while you go out and get your drug of choice. Yet I justified it sober, but with food. And I'd get, say, something for my daughter's packed lunches, and it would be 3 for 2 on offer, so I'd get the 3. And then I'd put them to bed, eat all 3 tubs of whatever it was, be absolutely stunned on sugar, and then really mess with it, because I'm now sober, and oh my God, I can't leave them on their own, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I'd find myself thinking, they're going to get up and go, Mum, where have they gone? Where have they gone? And there have been times where my daughters have, you know, I was a single mum then, and I had to get things on special. Well, I told myself I had to get things on special offer. So if, like, their favourite biscuits were on special offer, I'd get, like, 20 lots, you know, because obviously the kids are going to go through that now. And after a few days, they'd go, Mum, where's all the biscuits gone? I'd be like, oh, you must have eaten them. And you know what? I thought they couldn't remember, and they're starting to come out and stuff. And they're like, Mum, remember when you were going just for that? And you're like, oh, my God, I thought they wouldn't remember that, but I don't. So what I'm saying is it's exactly the same disease for me, just a different face. Behaviour was the same. Getting my stash was the same. The addiction was the same. My behaviour was outrageous. I actually think, in some ways, I was more predictable. Some people smashed out of my face. I didn't know what it was like not to do the steps. I was such a victim, such a dry drunk, so full of rage, so full of anger, that I didn't even notice the steps on the wall. I didn't take it in. I just went to meetings, and for 3 years I suffered, and everyone around me suffered massively. And I got abstinent, I wasn't abstinent, but I had a kind of awakening. Because I suffered from chronic fatigue, and I decided to research absolutely everything I could about it and what I could do. And I stumbled onto a way of eating, which, this is without OA, omitted all dairy, meat, sugar, etc., and all processed foods. And I suddenly felt so much more awake, so much more alive, and was eating loads a day still, compulsive overeater, right? But the weight was falling off me because my body was finally being nourished. And I read a phrase that really stuck with me called overfed but undernourished, because I couldn't understand why when I ate something and was stuffed and absolutely stoned, an hour later I would physically feel hungry, literally physically, and get that gnawing. I'd think, I can't be. I've just eaten a meal for a family of four. I can't still be hungry. And then I'd come and eat again. And now I know it was withdrawal from whatever substance, the phenomenon of craving kicked off. But I had this glorious pink cloud phase by eating this food plan. But when my weight stabilised, I was still compulsively overeating my food, so my weight started to go up again. And I began to panic. And I spoke to a lady in OA, and she 12-stepped me. And I really thought I could just come in here, find out what diet everyone was doing, and just do it. I just wanted you to tell me what to eat, what it was that got you all, you know. I was so ingrained, the latest diet, I've done slimming pills, awful things. I used to be bulimic growing up. You know, rotten things to my body. It's taken a real toll on me. And that didn't concern me. I just wanted to look good, you know. I thought if I looked good, everything would be okay. My life would be so much better. And on my second meeting, I remember being a bit frustrated and saying, what's the plan then? What do you do? What's the food plan? And, oh God. Somebody said to me, look, this is what I do, and et cetera, et cetera, but I really suggest you get a sponsor. And I'd had a sponsor in AA, but she didn't do it the big book way. And she was very loving, and I learned how to be a mother from her. But I got to the point where I was so spiritually sick and just still so angry and so ill that I just needed a sponsor. I was trying out for one. So I got a sponsor in another fellowship. I went to an elite saying it bumps down far. It's hard to meet every single mum up early, but I used to go to Gravesend. Because the lady I wanted in OA was full. She said, look, there's a lady I can introduce you to at this other meeting that she's from my line of sponsorship. So she sponsored me for 6 months, but unfortunately became very ill. And just at the time she became ill, my sponsor I originally wanted became free and agreed to take me on. And so I started doing the steps with her. And I was shocked, absolutely shocked, that I could not get the food. I couldn't get it like I did with alcohol. That's my story, I just couldn't. And the meeting I go to at the moment, it used to be like 3 or 4 people. So I'd sit there, it's really big now, thankfully, but I'd sit there and I'd think, they're abstinent, they've been abstinent years. And I'd compare myself to everyone, and I'd sit there and I'd shout, I just don't get it, I don't get it, I'm fraud. Everyone else seems to have it, and I began to convince myself I was one of those unfortunates the big book talks about. What would happen was I thought I could do the no sugar, no flour thing, but I've since realised that I'm actually, or my body doesn't tolerate some what other people consider to be very healthy foods, and that really pees me off. You know, and I think, geez, that's a really healthy breakfast for most people, and I can't even eat that, you know, self-pity. But the best thing my sponsor ever did for me was get me started on the steps, no matter what, as long as I was willing. And she said, I'm not even going to look at your food until you're at step 5. Now, what commenced was a very, very painful journey. I had two back surgeries. And each one of those involved huge amounts of morphine, and you give an addict, because that's part of my story as well, a huge amount of morphine. My brain was just, I was doing my step 4, I was writing essays when I could have made it so much simpler. I would then go back and find out that I'd completely forgotten the resentments I'd written down. So I'd write them down, like the same one down 5 times. And it basically took me 18 months to do my step 4, with all surgeries in between. And I kept thinking, what's this psychic change that people keep talking about? What's this spiritual awakening? But what my sponsor did is when she got me started on step 4, she got me started on step 10 at the same time. And that very, very quickly began to change my life. That's 10, brilliant. I'm a very logical person. I've actually had quite a few issues in recovery. I've learned that, you know, I've heard some people say recovery is hard. I changed my personal point of view on that. I think recovery is quite easy if you work it. Life's hard. You know, life throws stuff at us all the time, and I am extremely sensitive. And about 3 months ago, I was diagnosed with Asperger's, which is actually more common than you would think at my age, because women are very good at hiding it. Because I've gone so far in the programme, I couldn't understand why I was still so socially awkward, couldn't look people in the eye when I don't know them very well, all sorts of, you know, loads and loads of aspects of it, and why inventory wasn't enough. And so that's okay, I'm working on that now. And I was quite upset that I still, when I get passionate about something, I was told by people, good friends and my children, that I sound angry, because your tone of voice tends to be kind of the same when you've got Asperger's. And that really hurt me and upset me, because I want to help people, I love people, I'm just not very good with them. And it's bizarre, because my higher power put a sponsor in my path that has Asperger's, badly needs, needed a sponsor, was willing. I totally get that when she says she's fine on the phone and she can say stuff that I pick up on because she's got one tone of voice. And it's incredible when she's helped me by helping her as it goes. But with step 10, coming back to that, what I did was I thought, I'm going to test this out. Because this can't be quite, it can't be that simple that it's changing the way I think. And I was secretary for another meeting at the time. And I went there, and one evening some guy said something that really offended me. You know when you get it right there? And I thought, oh, how dare he? So I went home, and I did my inventory, and I thought, I'm not going to put that one on there. I'm not going to do it. And then for the next day or two, every time I thought of him, you know, his stomach goes open. I was like, oh. I thought, right, I'm going to do it now. So I wrote out all the resentment and prayed for him. sorry, that's the loving look. it was about a week later, and I suddenly was reminded of the incident again, and I thought, not only did my stomach flip, but I hadn't thought of it for a week. Mm. And it was like, it was way in the distance, and I was shocked. Complete convert, became a 10-step basher. People would come up to me in meetings and on fellowship, and I shared this with my sponsor at the time, and they'd say, I'd go, are you all right? They'd go, no, my life's awful. I'd go, have you done your inventory? And my sponsor said to me, Sarah, if someone comes up to you and said, if somebody said that to you before you've done your inventory, you'd punch them. And I went, yeah. And she went, what you do is you say, this is, if they want to know, you say, this is what I do. And other interesting things, you know, I can remember finding out, I'd do it in the evening, because that's what the big book said. And what I really want to reiterate, I'm so passionate about, is putting pen to paper. I know we can all do, the OA 12 and 12 says we can do a spot check in our head. For me, I have a mental and spiritual disease more than I have a physical one. The physical one comes after the mental and spiritual for me. Do you know what? I had flu a couple of weeks ago, and it was the kind where you cannot move, where you turn over and every bone and muscle aches. And you're in and out of sleep, sweating. And for about 3 days, I didn't do inventory, and I didn't make outreach calls. And I went slightly mental, just over 3 days. Not as bad as I've been, but and I knew it was happening as well. But I spoke to my sponsor, said, I'm so ill. And she went, yeah, I'll come down with you now as well, but you've got to do this stuff. I went, yeah, I know, but I need her to say to me what I hear myself saying to sponsees. I need to hear it out loud. But step 10, I heard on an OA podcast the other night, and she said, I kept wondering what this psychic change was, and then my sponsor said to me, you completely change your point of view on the way you see the world and other people. I thought, oh God, I had that ages ago. But I think because I took so long to do my step 4, where somebody that would do it much closer together, for example, that step 10 awakening would be much more obvious. For me, it was over such a long period of time. It was very gradual, but also very acute. The change in perception I had, and I'm not perfect, don't get me wrong, but before, if I left the house and I was full of resentment and someone cut me in the car, I'd be, you know, mental at them. Now they cut me up in the car, and I think, maybe they've just got a call because their child's sick at school. Maybe they're scared if they're late today they're going to get a sack. I totally see it from a different point of view. But one of the best tips my sponsor gave me, I phoned her once and said, how was your day yesterday? And I went, awful, the kids were this, the kids were that. And she went, and when did this happen? I went, at 9 in the morning.
And she said, right, did you do inventory? I went, no. I'll do it in the evening. And she went, you idiot. Why might she say that? She might not say it quite like that. But she said, if you've got resentment at 9 in the morning, write it bloody down at 9 in the morning. Take your day back. And I don't consider myself to be an extremely stupid person, but it's one of those duh moments. And she said to me, also, get a notebook, a pocketbook, take it around in your handbag all day. Because this is really true for me. I can work really late nights sometimes. I mean, I've gone to bed at like 2:30 in the morning this morning. And I'm not writing my resentments. If I've got 10 or 11, I'm rushing them. I'm not really looking at them. So this is my what goes around with me all day, every day. This book has been with me in sober, in pub toilets, when I'm annoyed with drunk behaviour of other people because it's getting to me. Cafe toilets, cinema toilets, restaurant. God, it sounds really bad, doesn't it? This book, I do. I have to go and write it down as soon as I can, whenever I can. And I understand that, yeah, I can do it in my head, but I have to get it down on paper as soon as I can, because my thinking, I will justify anything. And I will justify, by the time I've gone around with that resentment a few times, yeah, I can see it self-centred, but do you know what? Actually, it's really their fault. Because I used to blame everyone for everything all the time. And I can honestly say, step 8 for me, obviously apart from steps 1 and 12, step 8, the way my sponsor had me do it, was extremely powerful, and not what I thought it would be at all. But step 10 saved my life. It really does. And it, someone said, shared this the other day, because it would be in October, it was another step 10, and then they said, it's like pebbles. You can get away with rolling around in pebbles so long, but then they become a boulder. And before you know it, you're under the boulder. And for me, it can be like that. And I know straight away, because my behaviour, like when I was ill with flu, I started shouting at the kids. Stuff that I could kind of see from a different perspective. I think they've just started secondary school, they're hormonal. God's sake, don't speak to me like that just after 3 days. And as soon as I can start doing, you know, practicing my program, as I was taught properly, thoroughly, and write it down, and for me, I have to write it down and give it away. And as my sponsor said, if it's a resentment on them more than 3 times, you need to talk to me about it. And there are some that don't seem to go away. But it's been an absolute lifesaver for me. It really, really has. And you know what? For the people that live with me as well. Because step 10, I'm just so passionate about it. It is the one thing that stands between me, apart from relapsing, obviously. That and my high power and my sponsor are just crucial in my life. But step 10 for me stands between me slipping very, very quickly back into old mental dry drunk behaviour. And the first thing I will pick up is the food. Because I can justify in my head, even though it's crazy, sitting in a meeting where people die from this disease, I will justify it that I can't do the drugs. People are going to spot the alcohol, the food will be first. And then I know, I mean, I've been suicidal in recovery before I did the steps. So I know this is a life thing for me. Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle. And, you know, I've got loads of stuff going on at the moment, loads of painful stuff in my life. My mum's very, very sick. My mum and dad are in a really bad situation where they're living in Spain. They can't get any help for her. Like I said, I really struggle socially, but it's okay. And I have to have faith and believe it's okay. And as long as I do my inventory, keep on top of it with my sponsor, give it to my higher power, I have to believe. And I, you know, my faith can be shaken sometimes, but I have to believe it will be okay. So yeah, I think I'll leave it there.